Allein machen sie dich ein.
Kurzreportagen zu Solidarität im Alltag.
So one example of solidarity that I have in my life is, and this isn't a like political situation, but I had been sleeping on this terrible piece of foam for about 6 years. And I would complain about it sometimes, but never quite had the money to replace it. And unbeknownst to me, somebody organized a sort of friend network-wide funding of a new bed to sleep on. So that is something that, for me, like, was an act of solidarity. It wasn't really, like, centralized heavily onto one person, and it has, you know, changed my life for the better in ways that are pretty indisputable.
We are still in Zurich at Radio Lora, in a great company of international anarchist media activists. We have just heard in length and in-depth report from Chile. So now we continue with reporting on ongoing struggles around the world. Later on, I'm told we will also be covering some recent developments in the Philippines, also in London, and if I'm not mistaken, also the report from France is almost ready. So yeah, we have entered into the fourth hour of this year's live anarchist radio broadcast. So yeah, if you have just joined us, you have missed already quite a lot, but don't despair. We have hours and hours of information and presentations and reflections still to come. So now we turn our attention back to the US of A. So we have received a newsflash courtesy of our comrades from across the ocean. So in the US this past Friday, President Trump announced that he will declare a state of emergency to fund his border wall between the US and Mexico. Anarchists and other radical activists have released the following call to action, titled "We Can Block the Wall," a call to create a real national emergency for Trump.
The proposed wall and additional security measures will be devastating for migrants and border communities. During the last government shutdown, federal employees and federal contractors were forced to work without pay or to scrape by on furlough, while people relying on government assistance were forced to seek out limited community alternatives, and refugees were trapped in bureaucratic limbo. Make no mistake, a grassroots movement ended the shutdown. Trump gave in only when air traffic controllers and flight attendants stopped clocking in and airlines across the East Coast began to close down.
We refuse to choose between Trump's openly racist wall and the Democrats' implicitly racist smart border. The differences between Trump's border wall and a soft power smart wall are minor variations on the same deadly theme. We will block the border wall. We choose another way: freedom of movement, solidarity, and mutual aid.
We can combat Trump's policies that greet asylum-seeking families with tear gas at the southern border, that leave Haitian people to die in boats coming to the United States, and 58,000 Haitians in legal limbo, and that criminalize whole communities. We will uplift the inspiring work by black and brown migrant support organizers like the Undocu Black Network, Black LGBTQIA+ Migrant Project, NorCal Resist, and more, who defend black and brown migrant communities most targeted by ICE harassment, deportation, and the police. Together, we can defend refugees, migrants, and government workers. We can reimagine community safety and support federal workers and communities under attack. We can demonstrate through solidarity and mutual aid that we can build a world without borders or state violence.
We call for a movement from below. It is time to act courageously, together. We need a bold, positive vision of the future in contrast to Trump's white supremacist fantasy. We need to create a world in which people can move freely, where families can find refuge from danger, and communities are brave enough to welcome newcomers and create a shared sense of belonging. Where refugees now encounter hostile border guards, where black immigrants face the dual threats of deportation and incarceration, they should find communities coming together to welcome them with food and shelter. Where federal workers and contractors find themselves unable to pay their bills, they should find communities acting in solidarity to meet their immediate needs.
We call for a block the wall mobilization this weekend against the border wall and against the state of emergency. We can march, take over public space and organize sick outs in the nation's capital. We can block every ICE detention center, field office and ICE contractor around the country with the occupation of the public space around the facilities. Each of these offices are maintained by working class people in support staff, couriers, cleaning crews, tech services and social workers. We invite all of these workers to call in sick and join the occupations on the sidewalks and streets.
Second, we call for the organization of mutual aid to support the federal workers and subcontractors who remain uncompensated for 33 days of unpaid labor and to support those who rely on government assistance. We call for cooperation to pool and distribute resources immediately to ease the daily struggles of those most affected. We commit to taking care of one another as the state gambles with the lives of millions.
And third, we call for direct support for migrants and border struggles. There are multiple initiatives already demonstrating hospitality to migrants and physically defying the border that separates the United States from Mexico, from autonomous kitchens in Tijuana to indigenous-led anti-border camps in Texas. We will build the capacity to undermine the border, welcome refugees, and demonstrate that free movement can be beautiful, safe, and beneficial for all, so long as the police and La Migra stay out of the way.
Okay, so this was the statement coming from anarchists and other radical activists in the USA. There will be actions, hopefully, wide range of people is mobilizing right now as we speak and organizing in the ways how to answer this call. So. More information in next days and weeks for those that will be following them. We propose to of course use the internet, use the hashtag block the wall, or you search on Twitter with block the wall should be the handle. And block the wall 123 on Instagram. So plenty of information will be coming in from the USA concerning this latest call. By this, we have ended this briefing from the States. We continue the show after some jingles and music breaks. Hopefully, report from Paris.
24 hour in Nazi national capitalist misery.
Tick tack, 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 dictatura.
Manifest, money, leading people to slavery.
Živio
svobodo,
živio svobodo, živio svobodo, živio.
Yeah, so you're still listening to the fifth
international radio broadcast from the anarchist and anti-authoritarian radios. Now, to this morning, we made a short telephone interview with somebody from Paris about the Yellow Vest movement, and you're going to hear it now.
Can you introduce yourself and tell us a little background on the Yellow Vest movement?
I'm an anarchist living in Paris, France, and since the beginning of the Yellow Vest movement, I've been taking part of several actions throughout different cities of France, as well as writing articles on what is going on here for U.S. comrades. So the Yellow Vest movement started exactly 3 months ago on November 17th. It started as a grassroots response to the government's proposal of increasing taxes on fuels for supposedly ecological purposes. Then people realized that this increase of taxes will worsen their living situation. Therefore, they decided to oppose the government decision. It is important also to remember that the same government before wanted to increase taxes on fuels decided at the beginning of 2016 to clearly stop taxing the ultra rich. And so by these two different kind of decisions, one of like reducing taxes for the ultra rich and increasing taxes on fuels for people who are constantly dependent on their cars, this created like the spark that put people out in the streets. And so since November 17th, every single week, people decided to get organized wherever they were living. That is to say, some people decided to gather during major demonstration in major cities in France, or simply blocking traffic circles. The Yellow Vest movement was supposedly apolitical, leaderless, and decentralized at first. And I think it is important to notice that instead of talking about the Yellow Vest movement as a whole unit, it is important to approach it as several movements with their own characteristic strategies and specificities depending on the geographical area we are studying. So yeah, like for the little background of the Yellow Vest movement, that's what I have right now. Of course, right, like the movement had like different stages. For example, the beginning of it led to a major riot, like in Paris, like at the Champs-Élysées, there have been like huge riots during the three first weeks of the movement. Then by mid-December, it seems that the movement was reaching some kind of like plateau with the Christmas holidays approaching. A lot of us were afraid that it will end up by dying after the Christmas holidays. But surprisingly, in 2019, it started all over again. And until today, there are still people in the streets.
Yes, so I didn't know if you'd want to talk a little bit more about what's going on now and how it has changed or where you think it's going to go.
Okay, so like about what is going on now, it's a bit difficult to know. Yesterday there were a major national day of action, and in Paris there have been like some clashes with police forces as usual, and about like 5,000 people took the streets, which is like kind of like massive compared to the previous week. So clearly there are still people willing to be in the streets fighting for their living situations and against the government. And this didn't also just happen in Paris, but there was also demonstrations in Rouen, Toulouse, Lyon. So it was really like a national call again. About what is going on now, it's difficult. There's, in a sense that people are still like gathering in the streets, people are still upset, but there's clearly, we are clearly reaching another kind of like plateau, or according to me.
Yeah, if you want to talk maybe a little bit about all the different forces that have been at play, what's been inspiring or problematic?
So I think what is important to remember is like what is inspiring first with the movement is that it's been lasting for 3 months. And this is something that is like quite rare, and we should acknowledge it, because the government tried at several occasions to pacify the situations by making concessions, by trying to open dialogue with some forces among the movement. But besides all this attempt of pacifying the situations and turning the pages of the Yerevan movement, the movement is still in the streets. People are still angry, upset, and part of the diehard participants refuse complete dialogue with the government, and have lost all trust in politicians and the system itself. So I think that's something first really inspiring, because it's quite rare that among our circles or even among social movements, there is like this capacity of lasting so long and refusing any form of dialogue. Another inspiring fact is that the movement started as a grassroots response without any traditional political framework. In a sense that usually in France, when there is like a social movement, there is always a call made by trade unions or traditional leftist parties to start a social movement or a demonstration. And for the first time, it's just like people in the street that were gathered and that were brought together because of shared frustrations, and that refused any forms of like political parties or political trade unions to take part of it. So they really, it started from just common people deciding to gather by their own means and organize by their own means. So there's like a really interesting aspect in this. Because we can clearly see some links between our ways of organizing as anarchists and the way the movement started, in a sense, with like the ideas of being leaderless, decentralized, and an horizontal like platform. So that's just things that are inspiring. But there's also a lot of problems within the movement. First, of course, it's the apolitical stance that the movement decided to embrace from the beginning. And this apolitical stance allowed a lot of like reactionary tendencies to use the movement as the platform for their own ideas and actions. Since the beginning of the movement, there have been a lot of issues with fascist groups taking part of the movement and fighting alongside anarchists and other demonstrators. There have been a lot of problem with, I would say, conspiracy-like discourse, misogynist discourse, racist discourse, anti-Semitic discourse, nationalistic discourse too. So that's a major problem. And it still remains a problem nowadays. That is to say, just yesterday in the Parisian demonstration, fascists were there too. But luckily, which is like, let's say, inspiring, the group of 20 fascists or so, got kicked out by yellow vesters and radicals. So even if they are still taking part in demonstration, now there's like at least an answer from part of the demonstration to like clearly chase them out of the actions. So that's also like something that we need to keep working on to continue making the movement somehow unwelcoming for those groups of individuals, which is extremely difficult, because only 3 weeks ago, fascists were super organized in Paris and attacked 2 weeks in a row an anti-racist bloc that was within the Yellow Vest movement. So right now we have a lot of we have a second front among the movement that leads to a lot of street fights between anti-racist and fascist. So that's still problematic. Something that is also really problematic among the movement is that because the movement is really unpredictable, the Yellow Vests are still trying to find a way to get to increase their structure and to get more efficient. And so in January, for example, for the first time since the beginning of the Yellow Vest movement, so-called leaders of the movement in Paris decided to make a legal demonstration instead of white kite demos that they used to do before. Let me explain. When I said a legal demonstration, they decided to discuss with authorities. So the authorities will allow a specific march with the people organizing the demonstration. So for the first time, they agreed with authorities to work hand in hand on organizing the demonstration, which clearly was a big step back in the process of trying to be some kind of a grassroots power against authorities and the government. While doing this, the Yellow Vest movement also decided to create their own security group to protect the Yellow Vest participants. And from this specific security group, they hired a lot of ex-paramilitary. They are well-known far-right figures. And these, for example, some of these ex-paramilitary fought during the Donbass, fought in the Donbass during the Ukrainian uprising alongside pro-Russian. So it is really problematic to see that for their own security, the Yellow Vest movement decide to hire well-known fascist and ex-paramilitary to do the job. That was a major issue or so that we have been facing. And so far, we don't know if this will keep happening or not. So that's clearly something we need to try to fight against and making these ex-paramilitary also unwelcome.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add?
Yeah, there's several things. First, at the time that we are talking right now, there is another demonstration happening. The demonstration is to celebrate the 3 month anniversary of the Yellow Vest movement. So it should begin in less than 10 minutes. So we don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be a lot of people joining this demonstration because the national call was to gather to Paris. So we will see what's coming out of this major demonstration, if there is an increase of people in the street or if it still seems to be stagnating or slowly declining. The major problem with the Yellow, major problem or asset that depends on where you position yourself of the movement is that it still remains really unpredictable. So it's hard to tell where the movement is going. Even among us radicals, we are constantly discussing about where do we think this is going on, and we clearly have no clue. It seems that it's losing some strength little by little because there are less people in the streets than during December, for example. But there's a lot of other new elements that could bring a new momentum to the Yellow Vest movement. For example, right now there are students from high school and universities that are deciding to go on strikes every Friday to fight against climate change, to force the government to make some efforts to fight against climate change. So if these student strikes is gaining momentum and decide to join the forces to the Yellow Vest movement, it could bring some kind of fresh air within the movement and maybe lead to a new momentum. It is also important to know that a week or so ago, trade unions decided to make a major strike and demonstration in Paris. So if trade unions also decide to continue their fight and join the forces to the Yellow Vest movement, it could bring more people in the streets and maybe bring more claims within the movement. But the what is important to remember with the Yellow Vest movement, and this has been something extremely difficult among our radical circles, because we had a lot of fights on this issue, is that the movement is by itself impure, and some radicals consider this impurity as a good reason for not taking part of it, instead of understanding that the world we live in is by itself impure, and so the movement is just an image of the world we live in, and by taking part of it, we can try to bring more analysis and structural systemic answers to the structural problem we are all facing right now. So I think it is important that we stop our like purity stance and decide to join what is going on right now and try to fight from within to like bring a fresh air to the movement with our own criticisms to it.
Well, thanks so much for speaking with us, and good luck out there today. Be careful.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Hello and welcome to Distant Island and the International A Radio Broadcast 2019. Over the next 30 minutes we'll be hearing from anarchist prisoner Sean Wayne about building a wall, courtesy of fellow A Radio Network conspirators The Final Straw Radio. We'll also be hearing an update on an inquiry by the state in the UK into undercover policing, which has been going on for several years now. But first up, we caught up with an organiser from the upcoming Glasgow Autonomous Book Fair earlier this week. Following this, we will be hearing February's edition for Bad News from London. I'm here talking to Mark from Glasgow Autonomous Book Fair. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Wonder if we could start by, if you could tell us a bit about this year's event, where it will be taking place and when.
Right, so it's, well, obviously it happens in Glasgow, at a place called the Glasgow Autonomous Space, or GAS for short, which is in a warehouse about a mile south of the city centre in Glasgow. Book Fair is happening on Saturday the 2nd of March from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we'll also have GAS's 3rd birthday party on the evening, a benefit gig for GAS in the same night. If anybody wants to kind of find out how to get to us, there's pretty detailed information on the website, which you just Google Glasgow Autonomous Space and you should be able to find it.
So I believe you have a comrade there who's willing to tell us a bit about the venue, GAS, Glasgow Autonomous Space.
So GAS was started in March 2016, so we're coming up to our 3rd birthday. Yeah, some people had been they'd been talking Glasgow for many years about trying to set up an autonomous space because there was no radical space for organising some people got their act together and signed a lease on a warehouse space, and then there was a meeting, an initial meeting, and then loads of people turned up and we chatted about what we wanted it to become, and it slowly grew into what it is now, which is like a multi-use space that gets used for political organizing and DIY, craft, and sharing of ideas, and lots of eating food together, and yeah.
Okay, great. Is this the first time Glasgow will hold an autonomous book fair? If not, could you tell us a bit about the previous ones?
Yeah, so as far as like using the word autonomous goes for a book fair, this is the first one, but there was an analogous book fair in Glasgow in 2011, which that kind of grew out of an occupation at Glasgow University, which is an occupation of a former PhD student's space at Glasgow University. And it was occupied for about 6 months, and that basically turned into this like alternative education centre. And a lot of people who were involved with occupation were anarchism, so it seemed like a good time to have a book fair. So we had one in December of 2011, and a lot of people who were involved with that occupation came to that. But that was pretty much like a one-off thing, because it was pretty much linked to that kind of one-off occupation. But I'd also like to mention the radical independent book fairs in Glasgow that have been going, what went on from about 2006 to 2016, which were run by a guy called Ian Sutherland. So he would do like a kind of big book fair, like it's an annual event, like a kind of large one, and then he would do individual pop-up ones at various events, at like the CCA or like this Human Rights Film Festival at the CCA once a year. And most of the books that come from AK Press in Edinburgh.
And so what kind of groups would be represented this year? And for example, which kind of areas of activism?
So first of all, there will be like a number of anarchists and radical small press and game publishers at the book fair. There will also be a stall from the local branch of the IWW Careers Network. There's a couple of vegan groups involved for the book fair. One that will do in a stall in a workshop, and one group's also doing the cooking. So we've also got Sisters in Cut involved, and they will be doing mostly based on women in prison, because I think they've told me figures of like 80 to 90% of women who end up in prison have been abused in some way. So they like have a campaign that basically, you know, victims of abuse shouldn't be like sent to prison. So another couple of groups we should mention are the Unity Centre in Glasgow, which does support work with refugees, asylum seekers and migrants, and a group called Ubuntu Women's Shelter, who are doing have created a shelter for female asylum seekers. They will be doing a workshop at the book fair called Decolonising the New Borders Manifesto, which is something that's on the New Borders website. And basically, they consider that particular manifesto to be too Eurocentric. So it'll just be going into the details of that and trying to come up with a new manifesto for New Borders. And just also, we have strong links with these two groups, and they use our space like a lot over the year for benefit gigs or to hold meetings and things like that. Another group also linked to asylum seekers and refugees is a group called Herbal Unity, who provide free herbal health care to asylum seekers and refugees and migrants as well. And they came about 3 years ago because the law changed, making it more difficult for those people to access free healthcare. And they'll be doing that with the help of a group called Docs Not Cops. And I think there's a branch in London, but this is like the Glasgow one that's just recently set up.
And so is there still time for people to submit ideas for talks on the weekend, or how would people go about this if so?
We have completely run out of space for stalls, discussion talks and workshops, so no, people can't get in touch with us, although people still are. We've run out of space and time to do anything else.
Fair play. Moving on. Don't know if you guys had heard a bit about the events of the London Book Fair 2017, which ultimately has led to the sort of reformation of the London Book Fair across different venues rather than being centralised in one place. Wondered if you'd had put anything into place in reaction to this at all.
Yeah, okay. So the book fair in Glasgow is partly a response to the trans-exclusionary incident that happened at the book fair in London a couple of years ago, as you say, and also I've heard of other kind of turf incidents, as people call them, in other brick fairs. So we, you know, we were taking all that on board, but it was also, it wasn't just the trans thing. We were kind of thinking in terms of how to make the brick fair generally more diverse, because I know, a few years ago, there was an intervention at the brick fair, not by a group of women, because the anarchist movement in Britain, or actually in the world, is pretty much dominated by men, and still is. So that was another reason why we wanted to make the book fair in Glasgow as diverse as we could. The book fair we organised in 2011, there were attempts to make that more diverse, but some people accused us of being tokenistic, but then didn't do anything themselves to kind of make the book fair diverse. And although things like the gender balance of that particular book fair were good, it was basically mostly a turnout by white people. And certainly, given the links that GAS has, the groups and things like that, we wanted to kind of make it diverse in that way. Also, just on a kind of a more general point with GAS, we've called it an autonomous book fair rather than anarchist, because anarchist doesn't really describe all the different groups, doesn't reflect, you know, all the different groups that use GAS, so we feel it was better just to use the word autonomous.
And is there space available for people visiting Glasgow for the event?
There is. It'll mostly be people's flats, and the space will be probably quite limited, so we would want people to get in touch with us beforehand. So email us at glasgowautonomous@riseup.net, or you can go on the website and find your email address, or there's a Glasgow Autonomous Space Facebook page where people could message us. I would just say that people wouldn't be able to just turn up, because if anybody stayed here overnight, they would basically be locked in, and that wouldn't be very safe. So we wouldn't do that. So we would ask people, anybody who's thinking of coming up, to get in touch with us first, and we should be able to find basic people's flats for them.
Okay, cool. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for that. That was brilliant. Maybe I'll see you soon.
Hope so. Yeah, nice
okay.
one.
Okay.
These are the angry
voices of Dissident Island.
Radio
from London.
Back in the UK!
More than 150 people marched through the East End of London on Saturday, 19th January 2019, to voice solidarity with anti-fascists in Russia. The march was held on the 10th anniversary of the killing in Moscow of two prominent Russian anti-fascists, Stanislav Markolov, a lawyer, and Anastasia Bobrova, a journalist. The date was marked by demonstrations in Moscow, St. Petersburg, Kiev, and other cities in Russia and Ukraine. The event expressed solidarity with 11 Russian anti-fascists who have been arrested and tortured in detention in the so-called Network case. These young people have been beaten up, struck repeatedly with electric shockers like cattle prods, hung upside down and suffocated by security services officers. The London event started at the Cable Street mural, which commemorates the Battle of Cable Street in 1936, when the fascists were driven out of the East End. It ended at Altab Ali Park, named after a young Bangladeshi textile worker killed by fascists in 1978. Right-wing radicalism grows from social injustice, M. from Russia said to the marchers in a speech before they set out. As long as we have rich and poor, people will be angry, he said. Those in power try to turn that anger against refugees and migrants. We need to turn that anger against the people in power. The London event was supported by Anarchist Communist Group, Anarchist Federation, Brighton Anti-Fascists, Bristol Anti-Fascists, Brazilian Women Against Fascism, Feminist Fight Back, Labour Briefing, London Anti-Fascists, London Anarchist Black Cross, North London Anti-Fascists, Plan C London, and SR21. For quotes by attendees, supporters, and more information and updates on the Network case, check out libcom.org under the tags Anti-Fascist Action and the London Antifa blog at londonantifa.home.blog. On Thursday, 31st January 2019, activists from Divest London and Reclaim the Power disrupted the Oil Capital Conference to demand an end to filthy investors fueling the fire of climate breakdown. Reclaim Power are calling the days of action against fracking and new gas infrastructure on 22nd and 23rd of February 2019. And for more information, check out reclaimthepower.org.uk/supply-demand. 14 activists, part of the Lesbians and Gay Support the Migrants group, invaded the Airlines UK dinner on 29th January 2019, calling out British Airways and its CEO, Alex Cruz, for their complicity in deportations. The activists donned borrowed tuxedos and dresses. Some also dyed their hair, bought wigs, removed piercings, and covered tattoos. They entered through two separate ends of the hotel and managed to get in by walking into the conference room with a, quote, huge sense of entitlement, end quote. From their press statement, quote, while the airline industry elite enjoy a luxury three-course meal, thousands of migrants are stranded in countries where they have little to no connections and are vulnerable to severe harm and potential death. We call on BA and other commercial airlines to end their deportation contracts with the Home Office and take a stand against the government's racist, hostile environment, unquote. Shout out to Gay Star News for the quotes. On 28th January 2019, Revolutionary Youth and Militants of YPG/J Defence Group London carried out an action in practical solidarity with the Kurdish Freedom Movement, targeting the London headquarters of BAE Systems. The action signals the start of a campaign against the UK company's complicity in the Turkish state's military-industrial complex, responsible for arming the forces of occupation, ethnic cleansing, and genocide across Kurdistan. During the action, the activists set up a banner and blockade and set off red flares and smoke bombs. Check out the London Kurdistan Solidarity social media feeds for a video of the action and more information on the campaign and its demands. Also, on 28th January 2019, private hire vehicle drivers demonstrated for a third week outside TfL, that's Transport for London, offices blocking roads in protest at a proposed congestion charge. The drivers are unhappy with a policy introduced by the Mayor of London and TfL to make minicabs pay congestion charges from April 2019. Protesters accused Mayor Sadiq Khan and TfL of racism and opposing attacks on the poor. The protest was organized by the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain's United Private Hire Drivers Branch, that's IWGB-UPHD. Dissident Island did an interview with James Farrar from the United Private Hire Drivers Branch, discussing what they say is TfL's tax on the poor and the IWGB's counter-proposals for a just transition, on episode 226, so definitely check that out for more information. And last but not least, a quick rundown of recent actions by the fabulous network of Hunt Saboteurs across the UK. On 26th of January 2019, the Dorset Hunt Sabs prevented any kills from taking place in a hunt on Cherry Bulbury Farm. On 27th January 2019, the Liverpool Hunt Sabs and the Manchester Hunt Sabs paid Maynell and South Staffordshire Hunt a visit and report no kills took place on the hunt. There were also successful Hunt Sab actions taking place on the same day, 27th January 2019, by the Berkshire Hunt Sabs, the Devon County Hunt Sabs, Weymouth Animal Rights, Dorset Against Bloodsports, Wildlife Witness, South Coast Hunt Sabs, Southampton Hunt Sabs, Kent Monitor, South Cambridge Hunt Sabs, North Cambridge Hunt Sabs, and Norwich Hunt Sabs. And that's it for this segment of Bad News. Thanks very much for staying tuned.
Next up, we'll be hearing from Kate from the Undercover Research Group about the ongoing Pitchford inquiry into undercover policing and infiltration of activist groups in the UK from 1970 until the present day. And finally, we'll be hearing from US anarchist prisoner Sean Swain.
So the last piece that we did about the undercover policing inquiry was back in January 2017, that was episode 186, where we interviewed Donald from the Undercover Research Group, who gave us an update. The inquiry started in 2014, and Donald gave us an update of where it was at in 2017. And at that point, we were expecting it to finish in 2019. Now, that's not actually the case, is it? Do you want to give us an update on what's happened since then?
Originally, the inquiry was called for in 2014, and it should have lasted 3 years. The police have basically tied for the inquiry up in applications for restrictions about how much information can be made public by the inquiry. They're asking for anonymity orders for most of the police officers, the undercover police officers. So they don't want people to be told their real names, but they also don't want people to be told the cover names or in some cases even which groups they were infiltrating. And so the inquiry has been working through all of those anonymity applications, and a disappointing number of police officers have in fact been granted anonymity, but we're still getting some of the names are being released and we're getting some information. The delays in the inquiry mean that it's not actually even going to start hearing evidence until probably summer of this year. But we do have some information. We know that there were probably around 1,000 groups that were spied on by these units. Something like 150 of those have been confirmed, and so far only 3 of them were groups on the far right. All the other groups are left-wing political groups. The most recent names that have been released are all officers who spied on groups in the left. We have Edward David Jones, who was also known as Bob the Builder, also known as Edge, also known as Dave, and he was around between 2005 and 2007, and we know that he was involved in London Rising Tide and in the climate camp at Drax in 2006. And Rob Harrison, who we are told was infiltrating between 2004 and 2007, and he was involved in globalised resistance. He was also involved in the ISM, the International Solidarity Movement, and State of Emergency, and he apparently used to organise, and I think he was involved in No Borders as well, and he used to organise solidarity events at the Rampart Social Centre in London. And then we have David Hughes, who was infiltrating between 1971 and 1976 in the International Marxist Group, Troops Out, and the Anti-Internment League. So if anybody remembers any of those individuals, particularly if anybody has photos, it would be really great if you could get in touch with the undercover research group about it, because we're trying to find out what they got up to and where they were. A lot of the officers that whose names have been released, we've been told which groups they infiltrated, but if you look at what we actually know about where those officers were, they were infiltrating far more groups than they are officially being listed as having targeted. So those groups give a bit of an idea, but it may well be that you met those officers in other places.
It's almost important, it seems, for people, if they can bear it, to get involved if they might have been in those files. So what I got from that reading was the level of power that was invested in undercover officers to... Essentially, they could have made up anything they wanted to make up. There was a huge amount of power given to them to report, in inverted commas, or create events that happened in meetings to put people in places that they were or were not, and to put entire slants on people's personalities and motivations. And it seems almost important for people to get involved and come back with the truth if they can bear to be part of that.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of subjective opinion that and very derisory, I mean, it's quite clear from the tone of the fictitious reports, but also from some of the real documents that people have accessed over the years, that the scorn that these officers felt for the people that they were spying on, and also just, yeah, they're very subjective views. And I think it's important to remember as well that these are people who were writing intelligence reports, and their job depended on those reports suggesting that these were people who were doing things that warranted being infiltrated. And so I think there's also a kind of complex... A lot of what we know about the experience of being an undercover police officer is a lot of them became very attached to their lives and they wanted to stay where they were. And in order to do that, they had to be providing intelligence that convinced their superiors that this was a valuable operation that needed to continue. So there are many, many ways in which inaccuracies and slant and bias will be in these documents. And it's really important that the people who were there at the time look at them and pick out where those errors of judgment and just incorrect facts are, so that a proper idea can be put together of about the legality and reasonableness of political policing of groups like these.
Can I tell you?
1, 2, 3, 4.
It's really weird, the signals. Where's the volume button?
I'm sitting on the heater.
We'll probably start from just a very general.
Blah, 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 blah.
Who are you?
Blah, blah, blah.
What do you do?
Blah, blah, blah.
How does it work? Kind of thing.
It's very cold.
Some nice little things there.
1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Let's all be friends.
And we're going to do an interview now.
Here are some words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain.
What you say, what you say, what you say, what? We're caught like a bomb!
I know how to get the wall built, and I know how to get Mexico to pay for it. I know. You may be surprised that I'm in almost complete agreement with Donald Trump, but I am. Hear me out. We really need a wall to protect us from terrorists and criminals. And if the U.S. government can't get it built, we need to build it ourselves. Volunteers, not with major equipment, but with sandbags we can load onto pickup trucks. Millions of sandbags. And we don't need the Immigration and Naturalization Services to patrol it. We can do that ourselves, manning the wall with baseball bats and machetes, and of course, potato guns that fire bowling balls. Not because they're effective, but just because they're fun. And I have no doubt that when we roll out this ambitious plan, Mexico will gladly fork over the funds to make this happen. I've been working on this for a long time, and I think I have most of the planning done. I even have a map of where we need to put up this wall. By my thinking, we need to construct the wall in a large concentric circle around the Washington, D.C. Beltway. Millions of sandbags to surround the U.S. Capitol. Setting up manned checkpoints along all highways in and out of the city. Until we can establish some effective means of vetting, nobody goes in, nobody comes out. There are all kinds of dangerous criminals and terrorists in Washington, D.C. We need to protect ourselves and the world from them. So we need to build that wall, stack sandbags, get volunteers to man that wall, and make sure nobody in Washington, D.C. gets out. Guards along this border wall must be authorized and prepared to use deadly force. We can set up checkpoints on all roads leading in and out, much like Israel has done with Palestine, and we'll have potato guns that launch bowling balls stationed at these checkpoints. As Donald Trump has pointed out, Israel's blockade of Palestine has been 99.9% effective, and they don't even employ potato guns. Hopefully, our blockade of Washington, D.C. will be just as effective. Also, D.C. is along the coast. We're going to need water patrols, volunteers with boats, and we'll need some night vision goggles for them. We don't want senators or representatives, Supreme Court justices, or the president's cabinet being able to fashion makeshift rafts or float out of D.C. on inner tubes. They may even attempt to sneak out in scuba suits and rendezvous with sympathizers. We may need to block all cell phone use for D.C., and maybe even shut down the power grid for a short time. No phone, no emails, no communications they can use for conspiring with folks in the outside world. Now, I hope I won't hear protests from bleeding hearts about how this is cruel and inhumane. Let's not forget the people we're dealing with here. These are some bad hombres. Some of them are involved with drugs. Some of them are terrorists. Some of them are rapists. So, until we know what we're dealing with, until we know who's who, the ordinary folks from the extremists, we gotta build a wall. And I'm pretty sure Mexico will pay for it. Consider how Donald Trump has slandered Mexico for years. If leftist Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador learns that we plan to blockade Donald Trump in the D.C. area, I imagine that he will voluntarily and happily pick up the tab. And immigrants across the country will volunteer to provide the labor for building that wall. But there's also the issue of air travel. We have to find a way to suspend that. I have to imagine that once this wall is in place, all of the airlines and airports will voluntarily suspend all flights into D.C. and will refuse to allow any flights from D.C. to land. If anyone inside the D.C. Beltway attempts to get out by air, we can simply arrest them when they land and confine them until we deport them back to D.C. We need a zero-tolerance policy. We gotta get tough. It's the only thing these people understand. We're facing a serious crisis, folks. In a global poll, people were asked what they believed to be the greatest threat to peace in the world. The majority answer was the United States. This means we're going to be acting with a kind of global consensus. We're going to be containing not just a threat to ourselves, but a threat to the world. This wall will be transformational. We're going to build a wall, and Mexico is going to pay for it. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from the Super Duper Max in Youngstown, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at his new/old address at Sean Swain, number 243-205, Ohio State Penitentiary, 878 Coitsville Hubbard Road, Youngstown, Ohio, 44505. To read more of Sean's writings and keep up on his case, visit seanswain.org.
Allein machen Sie dich ein.
Kurzreportagen zu Solidarität im Alltag.
Talking about solidarity and how I have experienced solidarity events in my life, being in the movement, in the anarchist anti-authoritarian movement, especially in Greece and in Volos, my hometown and where I live in Skuod. I will just mention one of the highlights of it in the last month. One, it has to do with a broad anarchist anti-authoritarian movement in Volos, because with an assembly in solidarity to immigrants that we have, and we do things in this direction, we hanged a very big banner outside the university, 24 square meters, with a sign, freedom of movement for immigrants and the asylum process of an immigrant, Mohammed, who was in hunger strike. Okay, so after 5 days, the banner had moved, and we had to put it again in the correct place, the same place, in order to be visible from the people. And I couldn't reach the ropes because it was really high. And I was alone in this particular time, and I was trying just to hold the ropes in order to fix it. And then a young teenager approached me, and he said, "Hello, do you remember? Do you remember me?" And I said, "I know who you are." And he said, "I remember you from the actions that the movement do, from a demonstration and some actions before. And I know who you are, and I'm willing to help you hang the banner and so on." And then he told me that he just, with other teenagers, comrades from the high school, they created an assembly, and they do their weekly meeting inside this university, inside another squad, Akrida squad we have. So it was really nice that outside in the city, when you need help, a comrade, especially young comrade, had come to help you. That was a very, you know, romantic, let's say, feeling for me, and very positive in order to continue being in the movement, because times are tough in general, always have been. And another one, which is 1.5 years before, which is of my top experiences in solidarity, it has to do with the squad of Antrofio that has been evicted and demolished by Syriza last summer. But we did this quote after Idomeni's camp in the borders of Greece and Macedonia, where thousands of immigrants were held there and being treated very badly by the police and the state and the smugglers and so on. And we went there with no border actions and comrades from Greece in order to help. And then we decided to do a quote in the center of Saloniki as a meeting place, as a housing project, as a place that immigrants can put out their struggles in the society and live there with freedom and with comrades and so on and self-organize themselves. And that went really well. And the self-organization process and the process of the struggle, spreading the immigration issue in the society. And we did some poster gluing in the city. And after that, we have done things together with immigrants. And for 1 week, I was involved. I was in Thessaloniki. And when I returned, it was the first year's eve. And then the immigrants that we did things together just started crying and hugged me and said, you are really comrade, that you are better than our families, let's say, because in 10 days we did things together that we never did before. And thank you for being so kind, and you are really a comrade. And we spent the New Year's Eve together, and it was one of the best solidarity, you know, moments in my life.
El comienzo de la vida no estuvimos, no exentas del poder, del control, de los privilegios. Mi clase, mi raza, mi cuerpo, mi biología, mi salud o no mental, mi forma funcional. Mi orientación sexual, mi género, mi expresión de, mi forma de amar, mi visión del espacio, el tiempo. ¿Quién tiene más? ¿Quién tiene menos? ¿Quién señala a quién? Descubrí tus monstruos y ahora
te vas al infierno.
Me llamo Diana, madrina te aprendida. Vengo a confesarme de mis errores en vida. Que la potestad del feminismo sea testigo. Yo te creo, hermana, yo también he agredido.
Yo también he sido invasiva, acepto mi rol de poder y me he venido arriba. He traspasado límites, el cuerpo la sigue. Hice sentir incómodas hermanas con palique. He dejado tiradas a mis compas en las malas. Me excusa con mi necesidad de libertad. He soltado palabras que han herido como balas. Me he quedado callada cuando hablar era justicia.
María purísima, con poder concebida. Quisiera el sacramento de la penitencia en vida. Por todas las veces que cometí violencia y no lo sentía. Soy impía desde el día en que tomé conciencia que ejercía herejía.
Le miro la cara al dolor, paro el paso y le canto saeta a la opresión. Me creí santificada por mujer precaria y lesbiana. Dentro de mí una enemiga cis y blanca, no tengo un pelo de santa. Siempre con la guapa, la flaca, me explico. Tanto feminismo para un desierto tan normativo. Tanto discursito pero al final intoxico. Se han roto relaciones por falta de cuidados. Con el machi de turnos a ratos empatizado. A veces a las compañeras las he cuestionado. Pone amor, sí, pero del mal llevado.
Santa María, madre de todo, ruega por nosotras pecadoras en confesión. Hoy oprimida, sí, mañana opresora. No soy digna al feminismo, darme la excomunión.
Soy una ave blanca, a veces escribí un sote por la cara. Me tardó mucho con el que no cambiaba. Yo fallé con manchas, con un frío de atravesaje. Sé que pecaré de ser traidor, no ver lo que viven los demás. Siempre llorar lo que aún no he alcanzado. Y aún me gané las enemigas generando violencia entre las mías. Soy de la que critica por sexualizar el cuerpo y olvidarse en estas cosas.
Quiero ser pobre, quiero que me valoren. Voy a reventarme la voz en 2 meses. Luego ni se acuerden que esta vez come. Déjate 24-7. Obsesionada por el arte, quiero ser perfecta, pero sé que eso no existe.
Solo te mira y ya te callas. Esconden al papá que es el que paga. Apunta a la nueva y no al que dispara.
¡Bum! Vétame de tu ocupa. ¡Hey! Roja como Angela. ¡Hey! Cajela mis ideas. Cuántas de clase obrera. Interpélame, pero amorosamente. Nadie nace feminista, nadie nace consciente. Destiérrame, ya lo he confesado. Lanza tú la piedra, nadie libre patriarcado.
No, no me compares, no lo compares con un tío cis que pretenda violarte. No hablamos de dejarlo pasar, es acompañarse. Saber diferenciar la posición. Prima, yo estoy haciendo arte para regalarte. Somos precarias, no cuestiones que exijan mi parte. Que pa' que agarras sobra tiempo, me pongo en la lista. Bájame del pedestal, soy mala feminista.
Traidoras no hay piedad. La, 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 la.
llega vuestro final. Compañera, si tu fuerza destalla,